Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever or whenever you happen to be listening to us in this great big wide world connected by the internet. The last three guys who do a podcast are back, and we are together in our home studio for once in the last couple of weeks. Thanks, so, and it's really good to be back here. I'm John Morgo alongside Leon Brown and Daniel Bolton. It's good to see you guys in the flesh once again.
It's been about 4 weeks, hasn't it, guys?
Something like that.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. It has been a while. Yes, yeah. we've had prior commitments. We've had vacations, and I think we're going to be this way for about two installments, and then I'm going to be on the road for my end of summer vacation. And I don't know if you're aware of this, guys, but this is the last, starting today, it's going to be the last 7-day period without any form of organized football. The next time we'll see this 7-day period without football will be after the Super Bowl in February. So soak it in, gentlemen, because training camps will open up tomorrow. Atlanta Falcons, they are going at it, and they will actually have the honor, the privilege of being the first team to tee it up on a Thursday night, next Thursday, 10-11 days from right now, when they go up against the Denver Broncos in the annual Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio. It's an unusual start, and I'll be at the airport for most of it, probably all of that game. I'll be flying out, so I will miss that particular contest. Hopefully I can get a replay view somewhere along the line. So football is dawning. It is upon us, and finally, it just seems like it's been too long. So looking at the Falcons, all the talk has been how they have been upgrading the line. They seem to be making a lot of good moves. Julio Jones has confirmed that he will be in training camp. They're going to get that deal done. That's the good news if you're an Atlanta Falcon fan. So a lot of optimism here for this squad. But, guys, we have seen this play out before. It went disastrously off the rails last season. Injuries and everything. Could the injury bug strike again? Will we see another season of hopes dash for our Falcons?
I don't think so, John. I think we just got hit last year. I just don't see a team getting hit like we do 2 years in a row, like we did 2 years in a row. I mean, look at it. We lost Rico Allen. We lost Keanu Neal. We lost the heart of our position, the heart of the safety position, right? And we also lost Deion Jones for a significant amount of time. I just don't see that happening unless we get hit on the injury bug on the offensive end, which we kind of did because we lost a couple of offensive linemen. We lost Devontae Freeman. So now we don't have Tevin Coleman anymore, so we can't afford to lose him, even though Ito Smith is going to be very good, very, very good in this position. But, man, there's a lot of buzz and there's a lot of talk, and I'm not going to say anything, but I kind of am. they're saying that something might be brewing down here in Atlanta, you know, with everybody coming back and everybody being healthy.
Tevin Coleman signed as a free agent with San Francisco. I want to say.
Yeah, three-year deal, I think.
Yep, so he got a good deal for the Niners. So, again, but like I said in my intro, Daniel, mm-hmm. we have all been there before. 12 months ago, as a matter of fact, we've had the same conversation. And then what happened? A 7-9 year with all the injuries. And also another thing that the Falcons did is they fired all their coordinators. They brought Dirk Cotter back. That's a good Dan Quinn's taking over the defense, and Dan really, and the big criticism of Dan Quinn is that he really didn't know how to game plan for under two minutes left on the clock. That was kind of one of the big criticisms leveled at Coach Quinn during the season. He's got somebody in to kind of help with that. So, like I said, the Falcons are making a lot of good moves to seem on paper. Mm-hmm. They bolstered the line. It's just that I can't go all in on these guys just yet simply because of the history.
Yeah, I can't neither. And maybe it's – and it's not just the history, John. It's Carolina and New Orleans as well. And I know Falcons fans are going to cringe every time I say Saints. Saints. But listen, they've won the division 2 years in a row. Mm-hmm. Okay, they are the alpha dogs of the division right now. And I just think with a healthy Cam Newton, he's been sitting out all season and sat out parts of last season with that shoulder injury. A healthy Cam Newton and a very good defense, Carolina. I mean, we could be talking about them. And I know we're going to have our preview show coming up soon. But, you know, I mean, those are the teams you have to watch out for. I'm tired of putting Tampa Bay up there as a sleeper team. Oh, they have to prove it to us now.
No, Tampa Bay is so asleep they're comatose. Exactly. I don't think anyone is going to expect the Buccaneers to do anything this season. I would be surprised if they get out of the basement. I think they're going to be the number four team in this division.
They've been consistent with that, right?
Right.
Especially with the loss of DeSean Jackson, who defected back to Philadelphia.
Right. He went back to Philly. Yeah.
Right, so like I said, I think, you know, I don't see Tampa Bay at all as a threat. Carolina, you know, Cam Newton's got to show it. I mean, yes, he is back from injury.
Without question.
He is back from injury, but the guy's got to prove it on the field. Mm-hmm. And as you said, New Orleans, until somebody knocks off New Orleans, they're going to be the team to beat in the NFC South.
Now, am I going to pick them to win the South? Well, we'll see.
It looks like in order to get in the playoffs this year, you know what happened a couple of years ago with the NFC, also known as the SEC of NFL.
Right.
So,
yes.
Three teams went 11-5, at least 11-5. And with everything just mentioned, will it take that again this year to at least go 11-5? Because we look at the NFC North is going to have a little bit. Will Green Bay come back the way we think they're going to come back this year? Will Chicago keep on, you know, being themselves? You know, we have the Dallas and Philadelphia situation. You know, in order to win, in order to get to the NFC playoffs this year, you're going to be 11-5.
Yeah,
10-6 at the bare minimum.
At right. the bare minimum, yeah. I agree with that, because you're going to have a division that's going to at least get you 9 wins. And that division this year could be the NFC East.
Yeah.
So you have to take accountability for that division, because they're going to beat each other up. The Giants might come out of that one at 8-8. You just never know.
Maybe.
You know.
Like I said, the Giants have to move on from Eli sooner rather than later, and I think they know that.
Well, yeah, that's why they were able to draft Daniel Jones.
Right.
You know, why did they pass on Dwayne Haskins? Who knows? But you know, that's why they got the Daniel Jones like they did. Yeah. They're going to get him ready for a year. And then Eli will probably be out of the door, you know.
That man has borrowed so much time, he's in debt.
Yeah.
My goodness.
No, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, so, and again, with Saquon Barkley, you got to love the if Daniel Jones can come on well, but the Giants are going to have to develop some sort of passing option, because right now you're just daring defenses to put 10, 11, 9, 10 in the box. Right now, until you can prove that you can throw the ball, you're just the Giants are in danger of becoming a very much one-dimensional team.
Or with Saquon, you're right, John. They're going to have to actually spread him out the field. I mean, even him coming out of the backfield, or him in the wide receiving position in the slot, and maybe in the outside.
Guys, we're going to have to hold it right there. We are getting a phone call on our yet to be unnamed. Text call in line. It could be our special guest. I did not tease him coming into this, but I think because I wasn't sure when it would come in. But I believe we have Andy Demetra, play-by-play voice of the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets and the Atlanta Dream, on the line. Andy, are you there?
Yeah, man. Boy, I called a few minutes late. You already called me by a different last name.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I apologize. Again,
no, it's okay. It happens more times than not. Don't worry about it.
Well, people have butchered my name total to no ends, and I'm really sorry. And you know, I feel pretty forgiving about that. So you know, I've learned to kind of let it roll off my shoulders. Andy, again, you're the voice of Georgia Tech and the Atlanta Dream. Let's talk Georgia Tech first. ACC Media Days just happened. What was your takeaway? What was your takeaway from the ACC Media Days?
Well, I think the assembled media and the national media at large got a sense of what has excited Georgia Tech fans, and that's simply the energy that Jeff Collins has brought to the flat since being hired in December. I think Georgia Tech fans are understanding that they're in this for the long haul, that it might take a couple more recruiting classes for Jeff to reshape the roster and his image, not only from a physical profile, but a roster management standpoint. But just the sheer energy that he has pumped into Georgia Tech in what might, you know, turn out to be a transitional year, it just shows you how much he's clicked with Georgia Tech fans. And he might have the rest of the ACC watching themselves, that now they have a person in place that may be able to tap into the fullest potential of Georgia Tech as a recruiting force, and they're excited to see what the future holds with Jeff. I think Georgia Tech fans got an early sense that this was a really good match, and it seemed like after ACC media days, more people outside the ACC share that sentiment.
Yes. You said getting his own people, his own kind of recruits in. How much of a drastic change are we going to see from the triple option that that Georgia Tech is pretty much synonymous with?
Well, you know, the triple option and what you think of as a read option, RPO-style offense, they're not too far apart in some of the principles. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're going to see Georgia Tech run out of the shotgun. They're going to have a slot receiver. They're going to have a tight end. So from a personnel standpoint, it'll be a pretty sharp difference. But Dave Patno, the offensive coordinator, strives for balance. It's not like you're going to see Georgia Tech chuck it around 40 to 45 times per game.
Andy, I hope we didn't lose him. He's back.
What's up, John? Do you hear me?
Yeah, I got you back. Sorry, I got you back.
Little dip in the road here on I-20.
Ooh. We don't want you to get hurt. We don't want you to get hurt on our account. That's for sure. I don't want to I don't want to be the reason that you missed that game in about a month and a half down over in Clemson.
No, nor do I want to get a ticket. But just for the record, I am driving hands free.
Oh, that's good. I feel better about that.
Yeah, that's my PSA to everybody. So no, like I was saying, there's going to be more balance than people anticipate. Dave Patno, when he was the offensive coordinator at Temple, he strove for a 50-50 split the run in the pass. So just because Georgia Tech will be running out of the shotgun does not mean they're going to chuck it 40 to 45 times a game. And what's interesting, everybody expects the transition to be rockiest among the quarterbacks that Jeff Collins inherited. But whether it's Tobias Oliver or Lucas Johnson or Jordan Yates, the freshman, James Graham, they all, at various points dating back to the spring, talked about how they played the scheme very similar to the one Georgia Tech is going to run. And so they might acclimate themselves to this scheme and some of the concepts a little better than people think. Not to mention, they all relish the opportunity to showcase their arm. So while, yeah, there will be some fundamental changes in the offense that they're going to run compared to the option under Paul Johnson, I think there's going to be a lot of, read option type stuff that they'll integrate and try to utilize the strengths that they have on hand, not least of which can be the running ability of their quarterbacks. I don't think that'll be something they'll dismiss outright. There's an element of mystery and unknown as to how much they plan on passing it. Certainly they'll be passing it more than during the Paul Johnson era, but I don't think it's going to be such an overcorrection that it's going to be a situation where every Sunday you see the ball flying all over the yard at Bobby Dodd.
Andy, one more thing. You're on with Leon Brown and Daniel Bolton. We are the last three guys to do a podcast, and we are talking with Andy Demetra, play-by-play voice of Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets and the Atlanta Dream. Daniel's got a question for you.
Hey, Andy, how you doing? It's Daniel.
Hey, Daniel, how are you?
I'm doing good, buddy. So I'm looking over at the Georgia Tech football schedule. Of course, opening up on Thursday, August 29th at Clemson. The next toughest game, to me, in my opinion, is at Miami, October 19th. And, of course, UGA and Georgia Tech. That's always a dogfight. I don't know if you had a chance to look over the schedule, but are there any other games that may concern you a little bit? Because this looks like a very manageable schedule for Georgia Tech.
Yeah, you know, it's quite a baptism by fire when you have to go on the road to the national champions for the very first game of your tenure at Georgia Tech. So at least Georgia Tech gets that out of the way. They get USF in the home opener. Those two teams clashed last year in Tampa. It was a back-and-forth game. Neither team could really stop the other, but USF held serve, and they were able to score the last, I think it was 21 points of the game and pull away. So that'll be an opportunity for Georgia Tech to redeem itself. Duke is a team that over the last 3 years has really given Georgia Tech problems. They've had a hard time containing them offensively. You know, Daniel Jones is off of the New York Giants, but the scheme of that David Cutcliffe offense has always seemed to trip up Georgia Tech. They have to go to Durham to face them. And you're right, Miami is a team that, though they go to Coral Gables, this was also a Miami team that Georgia Tech beat last year. They should have beaten them the last time they played at Hard Rock Stadium, were it not for a miracle 4th-and-10 catch. So Georgia Tech has been very competitive with Miami in years past. They're also breaking in a new head coach, Manny Diaz. Who knows how well the pieces will all fit for him in his first season. There will be some challenges, and I think the ACC is garnering more respect top to bottom, and the Coastal is no exception. But I'd say the first maybe hazardous game after Clemson, with no disrespect to USF, and certainly going to Temple, which is going to be an area of familiarity for Jeff Collins. For me, it's that Duke game, simply because, A, Georgia Tech is on the road, and B, they've had trouble containing that Blue Devils offense in recent seasons.
I agree with that.
I want to ask you, you brought up that Temple game. Of course, that's where Jeff Collins went, was coaching before he came here. What is his attitude with that game on the schedule? Is he looking forward to it? Is he trying to downplay its significance, because really that's the first road game after that Clemson game, and he's got to go to his old stomping grounds. He knows everybody knows him. That's got to be a lot of pressure on him, right?
You know, we haven't discussed it that much with Jeff. I imagine his emotions will be mixed. He'll see a lot of familiar faces on that Temple roster, but obviously he's loyal to the kids that he's coaching currently. He's not the only one who made that pilgrimage from Philadelphia to Atlanta. About half of his staff followed him to Temple. So it's not just him who will be emotionally fraught that game at the end of September. But it really hasn't come up much. I think that the main emphasis right now for Georgia Tech is that Clemson game.
Right.
And so it really hasn't you'd be surprised how little that has been a subject of conversation since he took over the job.
And I'm guessing that you now know who to go to if you want to ask him where to get the best cheesesteak is, I guess. I mean, he would know that.
Yeah, I guess so. Now in Atlanta, you can also ask Jeff where the best Waffle House is. So he's got both of his bases covered.
He does. All right, Leon wants to ask something.
How you doing, Jeff? This is Leon. With five quarterbacks on roster and three freshmen, you know, how's the future going to look as far as Georgia Tech is concerned? Do we plan on seeing a lot of red shirts? Are we going to see a lot of transfers?
You know, it's a good question, and it would seem that Georgia Tech would have been a prime candidate to pick up, say, a grad transfer quarterback because of the changeover at offense, but Jeff Collins elected not to do that, and I think he feels very optimistic about the quarterback he inherited. Lucas Johnson is, I think, as we talk now, the prohibitive favorite to be the starter come week one. He's got... He can throw a good spiral. He can throw a good deep ball. He's 6'2", so he doesn't have that maybe size that you have in your mind of an option quarterback. James Graham has some athletic ability that nobody else on the team can duplicate. And Jordan Yates is a guy that, though he was Paul Johnson's signee and committed to the Jackets when Paul was still head coach, they really love the fit that he can be long-term in this offense. So I think Jeff sees enough good raw material with the quarterbacks on hand that they didn't need to pursue a grad transfer right away, and he cares more about developing the quarterbacks that he has. If you were to handicap it right now, I'd say Lucas Johnson might be in the lead for a starting quarterback job, but it's still pretty much up for grabs with preseason camp not that far away.
Yeah, speaking of Lucas, though, you know, I'm also from San Diego, California, which to me is very interesting because this man being from 3,000 miles away, you know, because it seems like Georgia Tech is good about recruiting local.
Well, yeah, if we're talking about Lucas Johnson, and Lucas is one of those guys as well who played in a read option scheme. He's a very capable runner, but having watched him in spring, you know, he throws a really crisp spiral. He's good on those out routes. Obviously, the confidence with which a quarterback throws is ultimately dependent on his confidence making the right read and settling in and adjusting to the offense. But let's not forget either Lucas, who missed all of last season with a Lisfranc injury in his foot. If you flash back to the fall of 2017, he was competing with Quan Marshall for the starting quarterback spot. Had it not been for an injury that delayed him at the beginning of camp, it could have come down right to the opening game, who Paul Johnson tabbed to be his number one quarterback. Quan ultimately solidified himself, and he didn't relinquish the job for 2 years. So Lucas has been a guy that has been hovering around that top spot on the depth chart. And, you know, a guy from San Diego, California, like you mentioned, who is familiar with passing the ball. I think anybody who has seen him throw knows that, you know, he can tuck it in there in a good tight window, and they're optimistic to see what he can do with this new offense.
Yes, sir.
John Morber, Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton speaking with Andy Demetra, head play-by-play voice of the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. Georgia Tech starting off the season in about 5-6 weeks with the Clemson Tigers. And Andy, what have you been hearing about Georgia Tech's defense? Specifically, you said earlier they are focused on Clemson. Do they know what they're going to do in regards to slowing down Trevor Lawrence, or is it just kind of a work in progress right now?
Well, if they slow down Trevor Lawrence, they'll be the first team, and their phones will be ringing off the hook from other coaches asking how they can duplicate that. You know, Andrew Thacker is the new defensive coordinator. He followed Jeff Collins from Temple. Georgia Tech has 3 to 4 returning starters, depending on, you know, how you categorize a returning starter. He's all about creating mayhem. That's not just Andrew Thacker. That's a Jeff Collins philosophy. Last year, Temple tied for 3rd nationally in takeaways. They very much believe in flipping the field via the turnover. And Andrew Thacker believes in creating pressure from a lot of exotic angles and letting his guys be ball hawks in the back. From a personnel standpoint, they're going to be inexperienced up front. There's just no way around it. They graduated all 3 starters from a season ago, including Henri Santa Moore, who is their top sack guy / havoc merchant. So there'll be a lot of unknowns on that defensive front, but they got a really solid core of cornerbacks and safeties. If you look at Tariq Carpenter and Trey Swilling, Caleb Oliver, Wanya Thomas, whose reps in the defensive backfield were limited last year, but I think he can be an all ACC type player, if not this season, then later in his Georgia Tech career. So that position group could be an area of strength for Georgia Tech. Generating pass rush will be a work in progress, but philosophically, Andrew Thacker, you know, I know how this can sometimes be just typical D.C. boilerplate talk, but, right, you know, he believes in finding pressure from exotic angles and creating confusion in the quarterback, and we'll see how well he can execute that with the personnel he inherited.
All right, Andy, before we let you go, I want to talk a little bit about the Atlanta Dream, WNBA. You also serve as their play-by-play announcer for all the games at State Farm. Dream just lost another game today to the East-leading Washington Mystics. They are 5-13. They're in the bottom of the WNBA. I know Angel McCautry's absence has been felt. Tiffany Hayes is doing very well, and I think Brittany Sykes had a very good game. Not the game against Washington, but the game against Connecticut. I believe she had about 425 points. What have you been seeing from this Dream squad that Coach Nikki Collin can build on toward as we head into the end of this season?
Yeah, I think their record reflects just how many ways Angel McCautry can impact the game. It's not easy to replace a 6-time All-Star, 9-time All-Defensive player overnight. And whether they would confess to it or not, I just think they're really feeling her absence, the way that she can deflect pressure off her teammates in the half court and open up spots for players like Tiffany Hayes and Brittany Sykes to drive to the basket. We talked with enough of visiting head coaches to know they all respect the athleticism of the Dream and their ability to get to the rim. And I think without Angel McCautry, maybe those lanes have become a little more congested. They're not shooting the 3 as well as I think they're capable of. And it's been a grind offensively for Nikki Collin. There's no two ways about it. They've still shown flashes of being that disruptive defensive team. And not having Tiffany Hayes these last 2 games because of an injury, right. You know, now you're down not only Angel McCautry, but you're down your leading scorer on the season in Tiffany Hayes. So it was a rough back-to-back on the road. Excusing those 2 games, if you looked at the Dream's previous 5 games, they'd won 3 of them. Their losses were in overtime,
right?
A loss with 3 seconds to go, and a loss with 2 seconds to go.
Yeah.
So they've shown the ability, the glimpses of turning the corner, just hasn't all panned out for them yet. Hopefully they can recharge and get healthy during the All-Star break and make a push, because there's still so much parity in the league. Where at 5-13, they're still not that far out of shouting distance for a playoff berth, and I know they want to try to get that push going after the All-Star break.
Yeah, I was at their game with the Sparks, I believe it was last Wednesday, it was a week ago today is when it was, and in that game the furthest the Sparks ever were 8 points up. I mean, it was just very tight. They would go on a run, then the Dream would go on the run to close it up, and some real good basketball at the end just got it to overtime. They just couldn't withstand. It just seems like they're so close. They just can't quite get over the hump. Do we expect Angel to be back this season, or will she be, or is 2020 a more reasonable timetable?
You know, it's hard to say. I know she's been working out with the expectation of wanting to return. If you go to State Farm Arena early enough, you'll see her doing individual drills before the team comes out on the floor. I think only Angel knows that, and outside of Angel, a very limited number of people. So I think it's just still sort of a wait and see. You know, with Angel, she's at that stage in her career where you can't fault her for taking every precaution before she gets the clean bill of health and returns to the floor. As much as I'm sure Dream fans want to see her back, you also have to understand that, you know, she wants to take this carefully because she wants to make sure that she still has several more productive years left in the WNBA and beyond. It's just still a wait and see game, but I think if Angel is a competitor with it, I know she is. She's going to continue to work hard over these next few weeks with an eye on trying to get back. But like I said, only maybe she knows and a very limited number of people outside her. So we'll just continue to wait and see and hope that she gets back to full health.
All right, Andy, we're going to let you go. Thanks so much. Be careful on your drive back, and I'm sure I'll see you at a Dream game next month. And if not, best of luck with the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets in their 2019/20 seasons, both football and men's basketball.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, Andy.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. I'll hopefully talk to you soon.
Driving.
All right, that was Andy Demetra, play-by-play voice of the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets and the Atlanta Dream, graciously agreeing to join us on our still-as-yet unnamed, unsponsored call-in line. If you want to sponsor our call-in line and get a lot of recognition for it, please let us know. You can hit me up on Twitter at John_Morgo, M-O-R-G-O. We use this call-in line pretty much every week. You can get your brand name with it and get some very good advertising. Not free, because we expect something back from it, but you can get some advertising for that. And, college football going to get started. You look at it, guys. We were about two, three weeks from the end of the college baseball season. Now with media days, the kind of unofficial start of the college football season, it's going to hibernate a little bit, maybe percolate under the surface for a couple more weeks, and then really start to ramp up probably the first of the month. And boy, that Georgia Jeff Collins does not get any favors. We kind of alluded to it. That game with Clemson, largely because ESPN ACC Network wants a really big game to kind of splash their coverage, and they got one. But still, that is got to be, if you're Jeff Collins, I would pretty much put that in your back burner. I would focus on making a good impression at home with the South Florida Bulls. And, you know, I would not overlook those Temple Owls, especially with all the emotions running into it. Their other non-conference game, besides the Georgia Bulldogs home game against Furman, the Paladins, will be here, and that is probably going to be pretty much a game where a lot of frustrations are going to be taken out of. Another thing about Georgia Tech, guys, they have four of the last five games, including the last three, are at the Flats at Bobby Dodd Stadium. So if they're kind of in the middle right there, they can use that stretch to kind of really make a push. They got Pittsburgh. Then they go on the road, come home, they play Virginia Tech, NC State, and then Georgia. Big set of games to end up with.
Yeah, that's why I said that the schedule favors them a little bit, because four out of the last five games are at home. They're in Atlanta. So that's why I said what I said. And like I said, I mean, you just look at the schedule from top to bottom. I mean, look, they start out with a juggernaut at Clemson. Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck.
At Clemson, to make it even worse.
Right.
And then South Florida's no joke, like Andy said. Mm-hmm. And then he has to go back for an emotional game at Temple. See, we're looking at all the dynamics now.
Right.
If he can get past this first couple of weeks,
man. If he goes 2-2, I think he'll be happy.
Oh, I think he'll be great.
Yeah, I think he'll be very happy with that.
Even though I think he would rather go 4-3-1.
Yeah.
You know, of course, with the loss at Clemson.
Yeah, we're all predicting that.
I think we're predicting that one, and it ain't because of Georgia Tech. Mm-hmm. It's because Clemson is that good, and they mm-hmm. have a quarterback that might be the Heisman Trophy winner this year.
Well, there's a person in Alabama that might have something to say about it, but right now
– there's also a person in at Oklahoma that might have something to say, too. But so I think there's a lot of people that got something to say.
I think right now Trevor Lawrence does have the inside track coming out.
He does.
And then the last game of the season doesn't make any easy on your emotions either.
No. It never does. A rivalry weekend, never does, because that's when you throw out all of the record books.
Yeah, record books out the window.
Georgia can be 1-9, but they can beat you that day.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Georgia's not going to be 1-9. They'll be
ten and one. Yeah,
pretty sure.
Yeah.
It reminds you of speaking of I remember there was a team that was an NFL team that was undefeated at one point in time.
Yeah.
And the Atlanta wasn't having such a great season, but they showed up that day.
Yeah, yes, they did. Yeah. Yep. Carolina.
Exactly. Yep. I remember that.
They had until they got to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Atlanta beat them badly. I mean, I don't think it was even close.
It was like 27-13 or 27-something. But Julio Jones made an outstanding catch over Luke Kuechly.
Yeah.
But Luke Kuechly is one of the better pass defending linebackers, in the league. So, and to do that over him, in the sky over him, and I think one other person, that was amazing.
Yeah, imagine, because these guys, they hang out during the offseason together, and, they do a lot of things off camera. I mean, imagine the smack that was talked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
After that game.
A lot of smack was talked.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you're right.
Exactly. Before Andy was gone on, and before, like I said, I wasn't sure when he was going to call in, so I didn't really promo it. But before he did, we were talking about NFL football camps opening up on Monday. We already discussed the Falcons. We were talking the NFC East, and we wanted to get into something, and we were just about to do it until when Mr. Demetra called. And I want to talk about, as we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, situation in Dallas. Once again, more soap opera coming, especially with Ezekiel Elliott. Will he sit out this season? Will he try to get a new deal? How much of a difference would that make to what the Cowboys want to accomplish?
Well, do you want to be another Pittsburgh Steelers team?
Right.
Or would you like to keep the ball rolling and potentially find yourself in the playoffs competing for a Super Bowl if you're Dallas? You could go out like Pittsburgh and play hardball. Think that you're going to save money by sitting out Zeke, who's a potential future Hall of Famer, 1,000 yards, 6 touchdowns.
In the prime of his career.
Yeah. Or you could think to yourself, hey, we could save money by compressing Dak's numbers.
And you got to see if Dak would be willing to go along with that.
I doubt it.
Or, you could just pay that man.
And it just seems like paying the guy seems like the obvious solution. But a lot of owners don't go that route, and usually they regret doing that.
Yeah, absolutely, because you got to look at Zeke's on his fourth year. I believe Zeke is about 25 years old now.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right. Yeah, 25. He's been in the league 4 years now. This will be his fourth season.
Still in his rookie deal,
his rookie contract. Yeah.
So therefore, if he does not strike while the iron is hot, he will miss his chance to get his major payday.
Absolutely.
Right.
Because no one, by the time his rookie deal is up, who's going to invest into a 26, 27-year-old running back long-term?
Well, long-term, it depends on your definition of long-term. For me, for a 27-year-old running back, long-term is 3 years.
Oh, so we're talking that the numbers that he's thinking about getting, he will not receive.
Right.
Well, he could. If he's only 25. So he might get a five-year deal worth, I don't know.
Oh, you said a big word though, sir.
Yeah,
we're going to say that in capital letters.
Yeah,
might.
Yeah,
he might get that deal, but that's because of the age of the running backs now. Not that it doesn't go deep, and then there's always a new running back that comes in. Mm-hmm.
And you figure when that happens, there Dallas is going to draft the replacement. And then he's going to impress, and then Zeke's going to be out the door. No, you're right, Daniel. He's got to strike while the iron is hot. Got to strike when you have the leverage, which Zeke does in this situation. But again, with salary cap constraints, I mean, in the old days, you didn't have to worry about this. You know, you can pay him however much you like, but now we got a salary cap. We have a capologist who's a full-time position in most, if not all, NFL franchises, and his sole job is to do the mental gymnastics to get you under that number. And again, if you pay Zeke, well, you're going to have to slough off somewhere else. And where are you going to do it? Are you going to do it in the wide receiver core? Are you going to do it in the linemen? Are you going to do it in the defensive area? Somebody's not going to get the attention if you do it, and it's just going to be a big choice about where you go in this situation. But I think Dallas doesn't have a choice. I think I think Ezekiel Elliott is one of those big talents that they have to hold on to, or at least make sure he's happy enough to go this season, because without him, Dallas might not get past Philadelphia. I think the Eagles are going to be a little bit better this season. They finally got their quarterback situation straightened out.
They just re-signed Darren Sproles to 1 year.
Right.
So now they got the speed on the outside.
Right. So I think if you don't sign him up, if you don't make sure he's in there, boy, you got Philadelphia is just waiting to take that division away.
And another thing, too, in my humble opinion, Zeke Elliott is the best running back in the league right now.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, absolutely.
I mean, come on, man. If he's the best in the league, then let's just go ahead and pay him.
Got to pay him
like
that.
And let's just do that. But here's going to be a problem with Jerry Jones and that, and the rest of the crew. What if Dak Prescott has a 35-40 touchdown, 7-8 interception year?
You got to pay him as well.
You got to pay him,
exactly.
Too.
Exactly. You know, then we have this whole argument again.
Right. And it was just like what Atlanta was kind of going through. You had to pay Grady Jarrett. Mm-hmm. Grady Jarrett is one of the best defensive tackles in football. You had to pay him. Deion Jones, you had to up his salary. And now Julio, who is probably regarded as the best receiver in football, right? Now you got to get ready to open up the bank for him.
And he was upset last year. You think he really was.
He was.
So somebody talked to him.
Oh, absolutely. If I'm Julio, I'm like, hey, why is this guy who I am better than being paid more than me?
Exactly.
Right. You know, oh, well, Julio, you know, when you did sign the contract, you know, you were one of the top. I don't care about when I did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They're irrelevant right now.
That's totally irrelevant right now.
So, yeah, they had to give Julio, I think, a soft $3 million last year.
I think they did, yeah.
In which he came out and performed to expectations, mm-hmm. despite the disaster that was the Atlanta Hawks defense last year. The offense did not lose a step, and a big part of that was because of Mr. Jones.
Yeah.
You know, as far as Mr. Jones being is what kept the Falcons offense relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was last year that he didn't get a touchdown until what, week 12?
Yeah.
It was week 8.
Week 8,
I think
okay.
It was. Whenever they played the Redskins.
All right. That was his first touchdown.
He finally got it in.
They were using him more as a decoy
for the first
7 weeks.
Which, at the same time, you know, you have to earn the right to be a decoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the only reason why he's being used as a decoy, this man was a big threat.
He was a big threat. He's a big-time threat.
So either or, this man is probably, I would say, would I be going so far to say that Julio's like 70% of Falcons offense, whether he touches the ball or not?
No, that's relevant. Yeah,
that's about right.
Yeah,
right.
That's about right. Yeah,
gotta pay him.
That's decent. Yeah, no. He has to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
He has to get paid. I mean, Odell Beckham last year received a lot of money, and now he's with Cleveland.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. That's not a statement about what the Giants did with OBJ, because let's be honest, he's in a great situation in Cleveland.
He's in an outstanding situation.
Exactly. So let's not say, oh, he's in Cleveland. That was a knock against what happened to him. No, he's in a great situation there. He is happy. He is one of the few people.
No, that's a knock against
the Giants.
When
can you say – how often can you say he's happy to be in Cleveland? Unless you're LeBron James.
Until this year.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
He's been about 13 years.
Like I said, there's a great situation in Cleveland. I'm taking the Browns to win the AFC North.
Yeah, oh, I think a lot of people are.
Yeah.
But you know what? But to say that, and what I meant by that is, everybody around him is getting paid best receiver in the world money.
And we should, and the best receiver in the world should actually get that money.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's the whole purpose of this.
I know the Falcons are probably looking at the Giants like, ooh. Really? Yeah. You know, you guys just created, because he's going to want that type of paper.
Right. Exactly.
He will want that. Now, another team that is, you know, peak is, you know, we're trying to regain relevance and prominence, you know, this team called the Chargers. And we have a situation right now with Melvin Gordon and him threatening to sit out due to, you know, him being underpaid, which I believe he's underpaid. And, you know, he does perform up to expectations. I mean, is Melvin Gordon elite? You know, if you ask me, I'm going to say yeah, but I'm going to be biased. But I believe he's really good. You know, I believe he's
Does he deserve that money, though?
Absolutely.
That he's talking
about. Oh, he's going to – let's ask it from a different angle. Does he have the leverage to get that money?
Right.
And he has it.
He has it.
Because we got to look at – you have the Chargers who are competing in the L.A. market with the Clippers, mm-hmm. with the Lakers.
Right.
With the defending NFC champions that is the – Los Angeles Rams, who has a great running back in Todd Gurley, who was homegrown. Well, not completely homegrown, but, you know, he's Georgia grown on this side. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm the Chargers, you do not want to lose Melvin Gordon. Because, as you know, I remember there was once upon a time about 10 years ago when we had LaDainian Tomlinson, Darren Sproles, Vincent Jackson. And we played hardball with Vincent Jackson. And we lost Vincent Jackson. And we continue to lose for the next 4 years. And that's the last time we went to the playoffs, in which, you know, then fast forward now. We've only played in January 2 times in the last 10 years. So if I'm the Chargers, coming from a Charger fan, you do not let Melvin Gordon go. He is the best. It took us a long time to replace LaDainian Tomlinson.
Right.
And he is the best running back that we've had since LaDainian Tomlinson. And probably the third best running back that we had in 20 years. I'm talking about before, back in the Natron Means era.
Whoa, Natron Means.
Yes.
That was a big guy.
Right. So, therefore, if I'm the Chargers, if I'm Dean Spanos, you pay that man. Do you go off and you give him, you know, if I think Dean Spanos and Jerry Jones are both playing a game of stare at one another. They're okay. Like, okay. Because how much Ezekiel Elliott gets is going to determine how much Melvin Gordon is going to want to get.
Right.
But Melvin is going to want to get his money, because by the time he's up for a good-sized deal, he will not – you know, they're not going to pay him like that. You know, because like we were stating before, running backs in the NFL age like milk.
Yes.
Right.
Can I get a witness?
Oh, none. No. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Once they hit 30, it's like their legs stop working.
Stop working.
Or yeah. We believe their legs stop working. Let's put it that way.
Right. Well, you know, it's like
and we had this conversation last week. So let's
you got to use the Branch Rickey philosophy. I'd rather trade him 2 years early than keep him 2 years too late.
Yeah, because of his value.
Yeah,
it was nobody better in baseball than doing that than Branch Rickey.
Absolutely,
and he was actually the innovator of it, mm-hmm. along with a lot of other things.
Right. So if I'm the Chargers, you're going to have to pay him. So. And I hope they do pay him, because I want to be, you know. So you're going with the Falcons, you're with the Patriots. I do not want to be the only one at the table whose team is not relevant.
But you know what, though? I think the Chargers will be a relevant team next year. I do. I think that they can take that next step into winning that division next year. And I know it's going to be tough to take it from that mighty, mighty Kansas City team.
That wild card's right there for him.
And Kareem Hunt is coming back.
Right. But I think they would prefer the division, because they want a home game.
Right, right.
Yeah, you know, they want a home game. They don't want to have to go on the road like they had to do. Of course, they beat Baltimore on the road. They were a better football team at that time. But
yeah, but I don't want to play that team again with this young man having playoff experience on the road.
Yeah. And then it seems like you guys' kryptonite is – that guy up in Foxborough. So
yeah, it's like every time you play against John's team, you know, then it's like Phillip Rivers and the Chargers forget how to play football.
It's tough, man.
I mean, my God.
I was watching the Football Life yesterday on NFL Network of LaDainian Tomlinson. And you know, and me and you were friends at that time.
Absolutely.
We had just started to know each other. And I used to tell you that I was a Chargers fan, and it was because of LaDainian Tomlinson. Just loved the way he played. And every time, the Patriots just ruined the Football Life for LaDainian Tomlinson.
He just
ruined the whole damn show, man.
Yeah.
Man, it's like, when we came to Peyton Manning, we knew how to show up.
Right.
I remember we beat the Colts when we went 8-8. We were the last 8-8 team to actually go to the playoffs and win something.
And you know what? I mentioned your name. I said, oh, boy. This is Leon's team.
Yeah.
And that year, y'all went 14-2.
And I was at that game, too.
Oh, my goodness. Y'all went 14-2 in New England, came into town.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, my God. That was the year Schottenheimer got fired.
2006.
Was it six?
Yeah, 2006. I was there. I used to work at the stadium, at Qualcomm Stadium.
Oh, wow.
And I had to witness that nonsense.
My goodness.
Yeah, man. I'm still suffering from the effects of PTSD.
Oh, I bet.
You know, I'm PTSD from that situation. Then it reoccurred last year. I thought I was going to face my demons. Then you got to face your demons head on, and it happened again.
Well, again, looking at the AFC West, the Raiders are probably a year away. Denver needs a quarterback. So you guys are going to be at least a lock for second.
Yeah.
And maybe if another shoe falls in this whole Kansas City situation, you might be able to surprise him. But as long as Patrick Mahomes is doing what he does, and it's going to be very difficult to dethrone the boys from Arrowhead Stadium. But like I said, I think you guys are very well positioned to get that wild card. I don't know of any other team who could possibly, you know, be potentially wild card worthy. Maybe the Ravens in the North, and certainly in the East, it's, you know, it's just New England, the three dwarfs. I don't think any one of those teams will be in the wild card mix as well. So I think you guys are going to do a very good job.
I got a question. There's two men in AFC West under a lot of pressure this year. Mm-hmm. You know, you said the Raiders are a year away. That does not alleviate the pressure that Derek Carr is on in order to perform this year. And second, yeah, there's a living legend that exists in Denver who has executive position.
But he has proved that. He has proved that he can't draft a quarterback.
He's proven that, but
I mean, the only quarterback he hit on was Peyton Manning, and I can hit on Peyton Manning.
Well, I think we all can.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that he thinks he's found something in Joe Flacco, and that is only yet to be determined, right? You know, especially with him. Derek Carr, of course, Derek Carr is under pressure to perform this year. But it's not only him, it's John Gruden. Because John Gruden, they have to get on an accord, and I think they'll be on the same page. But Gruden has to make sure he has the rest of that team on the same page. Because, I mean, you lose Khalil Mack and you let him go, the best defensive player in football, and you let that guy go.
Yeah, he was – He had Super Bowl aspirations in Chicago,
and he single handedly led that team to a divisional title.
I mean, we had this debate last season.
Yeah,
and my point is still the same. Oakland is setting themselves up not for this season, but for 2020 when they're in Las Vegas. They are setting themselves up to make a splash that season. John Gruden can do whatever he wants this season. This season is a throwaway. Is another throwaway season. Yes, progress must be made. But what they want is for them to challenge for the division title next year. And if they don't do that, then he's gone.
Then he's gone. And I think what makes it better, what makes it a cushion a little bit, and a lot of people might disagree with this, but the hiring of Mike Mayock, the general manager, who used to work for the NFL Network, who has a brilliant mind for talent and brilliant mind for football, I think that's the cushion that Gruden needs right now. And, of course, it doesn't make it any better that you have Antonio Brown as your wide receiver.
Oh, yeah.
As your number one target.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, Oakland should be the Oakland that we remembered, what, about 2 years ago when they were going to the playoffs?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they were back, they looked like the old silver and black Raiders group.
I hope not. from a fan's point of view.
Yeah, from a fan's
perspective. Yeah, I know you hated that. I know you hated that. Yeah, just like the last two seasons, I've hated the Saints winning the division, but love the way they've been eliminated
from
the
playoffs. Yeah.
I just loved it.
Yeah, so again, John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. Last three guys do a podcast talking a little college football, talking a little pro football as we go through the last seven-day period without any organized football games. Again, the Hall of Fame game a week from this Thursday. Week from Thursday, Denver Broncos and the Atlanta Falcons. Guys, will you be watching that game?
Of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. You know why? Because, damn it, it's football.
Exactly.
It's football. And that's actually one of my dream stops. I would love to visit Canton, Ohio during Hall of Fame football weekend. So, and it's just, it's the proper opening to.
Do you have a problem with the game being on a Thursday?
Yes, because I'm not used to it. I think that game should end the festivities. It's going to start it. And
either put it on a Sunday night or a Monday.
Well, they did put it on. It was on Sunday for years.
Exactly.
And they just changed it last year, I think it was, when they moved it to Thursday night. So I didn't understand that. And maybe it was a marketing kind of deal. It had to be.
It had to
because they're trying to market Thursday night football.
Okay.
But, you know, the only way to market Thursday night football is to put better games on Thursday night.
Well, again, that's the whole schedule. That's the whole schedule thing. You know,
they're trying to make it equal.
Yeah, and
every team's supposed to have a primetime game.
Every team gets on once, with the exception of the Thanksgiving games. If you're on Thanksgiving, you're on twice. Like Dallas will be on twice.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they're trying to make it equal, and they're trying to make it divisional games, so it will be easier to game plan.
Yep.
And they're just trying to make a lot of things equal, but I mean, what they're doing, they're just going through hoops. You know, we're getting more London games, so you got teams go to London, then they get on break. It's just a the schedule maker's gotta have this giant migraine when he or she gets done with this.
Yeah. Well, putting you everything know what? Together. And as far as the scheduling goes, and as far as putting better games on, I think that if you match up. Like I mean, nobody really wants to see Arizona, you know.
But you got to. But you got to
schedule. But if you're going to schedule them against Seattle,
okay,
or schedule them against Green Bay, or you know, I mean, because I mean, a lot of fans probably don't want to see. That's why their ratings went down. Listen, it's football for me. I look at any team, but at the same time, you know, I think that's going to be the complaint. The only complaint that I have with the NFL schedule is the London games, and there are like two London games that are divisional games. I do not agree with divisional games being played on neutral turf.
Okay.
I don't agree with that. And it's impossible to do it for the Super Bowl because they're divisional games.
Right.
And divisional rivals can't play in the Super Bowl. They can play in the NFC Championship or AFC Championship at best. But I do not agree because I think Carolina and Tampa Bay are playing – in London. I don't like that. Those games are not supposed to be overseas because now one of those teams have an advantage.
Right.
And I think it might be Carolina. So that means they don't have to go to Tampa Bay.
Well, the problem is, you know, what? Carolina from Charlotte to Tampa, what is that? 7-6? No. That's I'm thinking driving. I need to be thinking flying. 2 hours. 2-3 hours.
If that.
Yeah, maybe an hour and a half. Carolina to London? It's got to be about
hours.
Yeah, and you got to. It's not so much you have to go; all your stuff has to go.
Exactly,
and that is a huge logistical enterprise.
Flying is about two hours.
I mean,
and then
it's
you're going 13. Yeah.
Easy, it's going to be easy. Honestly, if you ask the teams honestly, do you want to go to London? 99% of them will probably say no. It just makes it it just takes an already difficult logistical enterprises and makes it a heck of a lot harder.
Exactly.
And the question is the NFL being successful at what they're doing, growing the game internationally?
Well, being that football is like, you know, you do have NFL Europe.
I don't know if you still have that.
Do they still have that?
I think that's been put in a canister.
I think it has.
I think so. I haven't heard much from it.
All right.
Well, you know, as the NFL,
we know the NFL says hey, we want to put a team in London, a franchise in London.
That's not going to make any sense.
Is that feasible? I don't think that's feasible.
It's not feasible.
Sometimes your expectations can actually exceed. What's the word? I'm looking for the – when your – it says when your talent does not exceed your expectations, it's a quote that I heard from the movie Blow. You know, but that part.
Yeah.
Either or, yeah. That's doing too much.
Yeah.
That was almost like, you know, when they were thinking about combining, like doing away with the Western Eastern Conference during the NBA, mm-hmm. and just making it the best teams. But then people were thinking like, okay, the travel would just be ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, you get something seeded like Portland would play Indiana in the first round or something screwy like that.
Yeah, no one has time for that.
No,
they don't.
No,
they don't.
So, you know, plus, you know, I think football in London is soccer anyway. You know.
they have it.
Right.
They're fine.
They're going to be okay. But, you know, speaking of football, are we looking at the end of an era that is the Pittsburgh Steelers? And is Mike Tomlin at the crossroads of
– I would be very surprised if Tomlin survives this. If Tomlin is their coach at 2020.
Yeah. If he does not have the season that they're expected to have or whatever that may be, Tomlin could be out. Yeah, he is definitely probably the top coach on the hot seat. And it's kind of bad to say. He's a guy who's led this team to a Super Bowl championship. You know, it's kind of terrible to think that he would be on the hot seat. He's led this team to what, two or three Super Bowls, I believe.
Yeah.
So,
at a young age.
At a young age, right. And just to think, the Pittsburgh Steelers have only had three head coaches in their history. Three.
Wow.
Chuck Noll,
Bill Cowher.
Bill Cowher. Right. Mike Tomlin.
So, well, I think they're going to have four in 2020. I think 2020 will be the fourth. All right, this is John Morrow, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. Last three guys to do a podcast. We spoke with Andy Demetra, head play-by-play coach of the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, a little bit earlier. It's about time to wrap things up, so we're going to go with 60 seconds for things you might have missed over the last 7 days, and we'll go with Leon first.
All right. I would like to get on, you know, what's the point and besides the point.
Okay.
The point is, in sports, as fans, what's one thing that we understand at the end of the day, and that is W's and L's.
Yeah.
Wins and losses.
Yep.
You know, I was having an interesting exchange via social media with a gentleman who was arguing between Kirk Cousins, who received that ridiculous monster contract that he received last year, you know, where, you know, the Vikings felt that he was that they were just one quarterback away from getting to the Super Bowl. Not just one player, but one quarterback away. And Dak Prescott. And, you know, I replied with, you know, what really counts? What makes you successful? Is it your stats or is it your W's and L's? And I've said it's your W's and L's. For example, if stats really made sense like that, they carried a lot of weight, Tony Romo would not be a commentator to this day. He would be in a Dallas Cowboys uniform. The point is that is Kirk Cousins, does he have the stats that look like a supermodel? Yes. But at the end of the day, this man was given a Lamborghini of a team, 2018 model of the Minnesota Vikings that had all the fixings, running back, defense, offense, top wide receiver Adam Thielen, and he missed the playoffs anyway. Your stats mean nothing. Versus you look at Dak Prescott, who's been to the playoffs two times in the last 3 years, which is – equal to the amount that my favorite quarterback, Phillip Rivers, have been to the last 10 years. And if stats meant something, that means that if stats really is really the bulk of my concern, Phillip Rivers will be amongst the greats. But he's not.
No.
Because W's and L's is what means the most at the end of the day. So I'm looking at it's all about the bottom line, W's and L's, not stats in fantasy football. So that's my point right there.
Well, okay, we'll do this. Again, I'm going to promo my Twitter feed once more, John_Morgo. That's where you can hit me up, follow me if you got any questions about the show, wants to mention a particular topic, that's where you go on Twitter. One of my Twitter friends is a guy by the name of John Kim. He is a works for PGA Kids of America, one of the offshoots of the Professional Golf Association. I've known the man for years. We went to school together. Very good golfer, and well, he's got about 2 handicap. Loves the game, always trying to grow it. Well, this week I played a humongous practical joke on him, and I used his favorite singer to do it. Yes, I had a photo with singer Debbie Gibson, and I was holding a picture that says John Kim stinks at golf. Well, that got the reaction I wanted because. One thing you know about John, he's a good guy, he has got a huge ego. And there's nothing I enjoy more than pricking it ever so gently. So that is what I was able to do. And I want to thank John for basically being a good sport about the whole thing. Yes, he endured a little bit of ribbing because his favorite singer knows that he is not very good at golf, even though he is, well, let's just say he's better than me. And leave it at that. But that is, and I want to thank Ms. Gibson for just being a good sport and participating in that practical joke, a joke that I had been spending a year brewing, and it only goes to prove that I can keep a secret because I didn't tell anyone about my plans for that particular stunt. So, again, John, you're a good sport, and appreciate all that. And I know you're probably going to get me back one of these days, but, again, it was a lot of fun executing that to perfection. There's nothing better than when a practical joke goes just the way you want it to, and that one did. And I believe Daniel is set up for an essay.
Yes, I am. That was funny, though. I will say that when I saw that, I started to call you and say, John, what is this? What is this? What is this? How did you get Debbie Gibson? Right. All right. So I have entitled this essay, Can She Have Your Attention, Please?
Okay.
Since the early part of 2019, well, every year rather, we try to find distractions, you know, to kind of help us get over the 6-month layoff of football. While this year's NBA season and offseason has given us that distraction, the women of sports are often in the shadows of men's sports. Not today. In this piece, I'm going to quickly run down the distractions that women have been able to cause, and why it's important that we pay attention to the muscles that they can flex. Fellas, calm down. I'm keeping this PG, okay?
That's good.
I really am. While the men's basketball title game was a classic of its own, the women showed that they could pull off a classic of a title game and a Final Four game as well. Nominated for best game at this year's ESPYs, Notre Dame's 81-76 win over mighty UConn in the Final Four gave us one of the better games of the year. Not to overshadow Baylor's 82-81 national title win over the Irish, which some would argue was the better one. Sorry, Russell, as in Russell Westbrook. There was a triple-double machine that never really got the publicity she deserved. This year, Oregon Ducks star point guard Sabrina Ionescu became the all-time leader in triple-doubles in NCAA history, led the Ducks to their first Final Four appearance, was named the 2019 Wooden Award winner with Duke's you know who. And, oh, by the way, she's returning her senior season, although she was eligible for the WNBA draft. More distractions are ahead. For example, Caitlin Oyaneshi. I hope I pronounced that name right. Oyashi, I'm sorry. It's Caitlin Oyashi. She scores a perfect 10 on the floor exercises in gymnastics. Just go on YouTube and watch that one, and you'll see why she scored that. She actually won the ESPY for best play doing that. Then there's Rachel Garcia, also from UCLA, who put on a magical performance to help her team advance to the national championship softball series. You want her numbers in that game? In the game winner against the Washington Huskies, she fanned 16 batters, threw 179 pitches, and allowed no runs in 10 innings, and then had the nerve to hit a 3-run walk-off home run to send UCLA to the title game, which they would eventually defeat mighty Oklahoma. But there were two stories, however, that prompted me to write this piece. I was taken away by the swagger and the embrace of this year's women's national soccer team. Megan Rapinoe's dopeness and Alex Morgan's great play still shows why the United States is still dominant in soccer. Of course, Alex Morgan won best female athlete and the U.S. women's national team won best team. So they dominated the ESPYs. But too far from where the Women's World Cup took place, there was Wimbledon. There was the ladies. There was a teenager from Atlanta, Georgia, that captured the hearts of many by her inspired play. And regardless of her quarterfinal loss to champion Simona Halep, yes, I said it, her quarterfinal loss, which means she made it to the final 16. 15-year-old Coco Gauff gave us a moment that we will never forget. From her incredible upcoming to her bright future, Coco showed us why girl power exists in all women of all ages. In closing, let me salute some other women. Simone Biles, whose trophy case just got bigger and badder than any other gymnast in history. Serena Williams, for your continuous efforts to push for equality. And for three females, you guys might not know them, or you might know one of them. Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, and Ronda Rousey. Changing the game of sports entertainment forever as they became the first group of women to main event WrestleMania. For those who are fastly approaching greatness, Naomi Osaka, tennis, she's coming. LSU track freshman phenom, Sha'Carri Richardson, she's coming. The 2019 Gatorade Female Athlete of the Year by way of East Coweta High School in Sharpsburg, Georgia, I had to mention her, Kelly Lynch, she's coming. Now, I'm sure they'll ask you, and now I ask you, do the ladies have your attention now?
Coco Gauff's father played for the Georgia State basketball team back in the early 1980s.
He did.
Just thought I would toss that out there. Another excellent piece, Daniel. Appreciate that as always. That's going to wrap us up for the last three guys to do a podcast. John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown will be with you next week. And then, well, again, I'm going to be taking, after that, I'll be taking my end of summer / get my brain ready for football sabbatical to Las Vegas. So Daniel will be taking over. I will be calling in. But again, that is in 2 weeks. We'll be with you again next week to wrap up the first week of Falcons training camp and anything other that we hit upon, as again, football is starting to ramp up. And that is always a great time, especially here in the South. And remember, in the South, with the humidity and the heat being an issue, that's pretty much an issue everywhere. Please stay hydrated. Don't overexert yourself. Take it easy during those first couple of reps. Your body's got to get in shape, and we want you to still be there when the games come ready in next month. All right, that will wrap us up. Tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell whoever you want to. Tell your bartender, tell your butcher, tell your baker, tell your candlestick maker about the three guys. Last three guys do a podcast right here on SoundCloud. Soon to move on to other and better platforms. Appreciate you all for joining us, and we'll see you in 7 days. Have a great night, everybody.
And you too, Debbie Dick Gibson.